Welcome back to TV Campfire Podcast. This is episode number 34, and I am Libya, your host. And this week we have returning guests.
Hi, I'm Josh from Los Angeles.
Peter from Los Angeles.
And Allison, also from Los Angeles.
I need a little diversity here. We'll work on that next time. Alright, so this week in the news, the big news is that Caprica has been canceled. And that's not surprising exactly, because of that little event that they had at the beginning of the season, we knew that the show was in danger. And
I think the more surprising thing was that they pulled the last five episodes from a broadcast schedule.
Yeah, it's not till 2011.
Yeah.
Which is
what?
Weird.
They're going to wait till after the new year to air them.
Yeah, their announcement was, effective immediately, Caprica will be off the air, but will return the last five episodes in January 2011. Which I was like, why? Just finish it off.
Well, they
like,
need more room for wrestling, clearly.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah,
and the thing is, at this point, because you've canceled the show, everybody knows you're canceled, who's going to watch them? And like the momentum is going right now, and even though it had canceled, I would have continued to watch. Now you're telling me I got to wait till January. I'm like, I might not even bother, you know, turning back
I'll watch it when it airs, but I mean, at this point, I don't really care about it.
And that
way.
was kind of my thing. The first episode that they had out of the box, I thought was really good, and then it's kind of like,
Too many meandering storylines.
Yeah, it's too
that
slow.
I don't care about.
You know, the thing with Caprica is that it did get kind of. It got very slow for like about a good four or five episodes before they finally started to get into the interesting stuff. And by that time, really, the audience had started falling off, and it just kept falling off more and more. And then they had that ridiculous hiatus.
Right.
Yeah.
And that lost even more viewers. And frankly, it is just at the point where it's really getting incredibly interesting. They're bringing out the Cylons for the first time.
Yeah, that Cylon hit was awesome.
Yeah.
It was great. And you know, we're getting to all this great stuff as the story is starting to kick into gear. And that's when they choose to cancel it.
Right.
Yeah.
So it was really
a
shame.
And also, like, they canceled it right after the episode that ended with that awesome holy crap moment with Virgis.
Yeah, all that stuff, part of the problem, I blame at the feet of the creators of the show, because their plot was just too slow. Mm-hmm. But the other half I blame on sci-fi, and that the way they handled it was just really poor. So, I guess I'm waiting for the next spinoff, since that's been greenlit, so I'll wait for that. The other last bit of news we have is that for those who watch Big Love, this apparently is going to be the last season. I don't watch Big Love, so...
Yep.
Oh, well.
Neither do I.
I don't either, but I know a lot of people...
I saw the pilot.
A friend of mine last night was talking about how she was really pissed off that this is the last season.
Well, but, I mean, it's good. Yeah,
people who are into it, I'm sorry.
Right. That's the news. All right, so let's kick it off with this week we're going to talk about Dexter. It's been a couple weeks since we talked about it. And we're up to episode 5, I believe.
Yeah.
And right now, I actually find the storyline really interesting. They have at the end of episode 4, I got this really kind of creepy smile on my face. I was like, that's weird. That was a Dexter smile. And it was all based on the fact
I'm
that...
I'm not coming over anymore.
I know. It was weird. It was like, it gets to the end of the episode, and because he saves the girl, because, you know, the whole thing is he kills the serial killer, and the girl sees him. And he's trying to gain her trust, trying to heal her back to health because she's an innocent. He doesn't want to kill her. But then he's kind of like, well, she's seen me, so what do I do?
Yeah.
But what was great was when she finally opened up and started talking to him, she was like, yeah, he wasn't the only one who attacked me and raped me. There were others. And I was like, I just smiled because I was like, more victims. You know, and I was just like, Dexter has a list. He now has like a laundry list of people to kill.
He has
like,
a to-do list.
No, I was the same way as she said there were others. I'm like, and we have a season, ladies
Thank
and
you.
Gentlemen.
That's exactly what I was thinking. I was like, ooh. But they actually surprised me with the next episode where Dexter was really trying to resist going after the people. You know, well, one, her memory was all weird. She didn't really know who these guys were.
Yeah, and
was
like
leaving.
The one guy they go after ended up not
being the guy
at all.
Yeah, so it's all false things. But I like the fact that he's really trying to just, because she's like kind of going a little crazy and kind of going on the path of let's go kill them. And he's very much
kind
like...
Kind of?
Yeah, I know. But what I like is that he's like the voice of reason. It's so bizarre. He's like...
Well, though,
like,
at the same time, you know, he is researching these guys.
Well,
he's
but what I'm talking about is his insistence to her that this is a dark path that you don't want to go on. You do not want to follow me down this road. Yeah. You don't want to become what I am.
Yeah, but, you know, clearly that's not working with her. I think that it would, you know what I think would finally get her on the plane and get her out of there? Is if he said, look, I'm doing it for you. You can leave it in my hands.
I don't think she would accept that.
Yeah, I think she would want to be there. She would want to be
a part of it.
Right.
And as far as, like, the researching thing, I sort of felt like he was researching them to sort of beat her to them.
More than anything else. He wasn't really, it wasn't like his normal routine, which is, oh, I gotta find a guy to kill, you know? It wasn't like that. It was more, I have to stop her from becoming a monster like me. Which I thought was an interesting thing. All the other storylines, they're alright.
Well, I mean, like, there was the moment where the one scene where Batista confronts. And I'm like, oh god, Batista's being a jerk again. And holy crap, is that Peter Weller in the background?
Oh. When I first saw him, and it was just this one shot, I thought, wow, he really must have needed the check or something.
Yeah, because he had no lines, right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but
I have to say, you know, his performance is a little a bit over the top.
Community theater, maybe.
Oh yeah, it's like, have you been on television recently?
I mean,
recently?
You know, I was waiting for him to stick a little mustache on so he could twirl it.
Yeah,
it was really, really bad.
Can I ask, just because I have to catch up, but I just want to know, who is he on the show?
He's a cop. He's a dirty cop.
He's a dirty cop. Yeah.
Okay.
But he's way over the top. Like, whatever character he's playing, somebody didn't explain it to him properly. Yeah. Because he's playing, I don't know who he's playing.
Well, I figured he would be in this because Manny Coto is producing it this season. And for some reason, Manny Coto brings Peter Weller into everything he does. he was on 24 when Manny Coto was producing it.
Yeah, but he was fine on 24.
Yeah. I'm just saying, like, that's why Peter Weller's there.
Right, but he is playing this character so over the top that he has had one actual scene with dialogue, and I hate him already.
I know. Yeah, me too.
And it is strange, because he usually underplays his performances, if anything. And I'm usually used to seeing him as a, you know, a very intelligent, very, very subtle performer. And so this was weird. This was very out of character.
I sort of felt like he was doing, like, joke takes of all of his lines, and they're like, you know what? Let's go with that.
Yeah. It was bizarre. All right. So Dexter, I'd say the season is now kicked in.
Yeah.
Because before it was very much like, let's wrap up last season. Let's deal with the whole, you know, the death of the wife and the kids and all that stuff. But now we're definitely kicked into full gear. And I like it.
I mean, in general, though, I usually think Dexter. Usually, even the seasons I really like I think my favorite is Jimmy Smith season 3.
Yes.
Yeah. Even that season, which is probably my favorite season, I usually think Dexter takes a while to get going anyways.
It does.
Like, it usually kind of starts, you're like, alright, this is okay. And then around where you're saying 5, that's when it starts to get exciting for me.
Well, yeah.
So.
And especially in last season, like, there were a lot of different, like, storylines going on, and it was hard to, it didn't feel focused, and then, like, maybe the last, like, 3 or 4 episodes, it all sort of came together and had this awesome ending.
Yeah, that's true.
So that's sort of why I'm giving this season more leeway.
Yeah, I mean, I think last season, I think once Dexter sees John Lithgow has this happy suburban life, and that's probably episode 4 or 5. That's when I was like, oh, is this kind of, because that means that's what he wants. Then I thought, but because remember, season 4 starts with him. He's really tired.
Right.
Which was kind of funny, to that spoof opening with, like, blah, he misses the mosquito and all that kind of stuff. So, but I'm excited that, it's kind of weird that Peter Weller's over the top, but I'm curious now. I'll probably catch up now. So,
yeah.
Cool.
All right. Next show we're going to talk about really briefly is actually Lie to Me. I don't necessarily want to talk about what happened in the episode. What I do want to address is the overall arc that they have going on for maybe the last 4 or 5 episodes, which is the dynamics between Foster and Lightman. And you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
And basically what's going on is they have been friends for, let's say, 10 years. Their friendship has worked pretty well. She's been married and not married. He's been married and not married. And they have this tension going on between them. And they're like the sexual tension of the show. Are they will okay. they're doing the whole will they yeah. won't they get together thing, right? Which is fine. And I'm used to shows playing it up or whatever. But at the basis of that, underneath that, is that their friendship, in that they never lie to each other, they always trust each other. What they're doing right now, which I understand what they're doing, and I'm not sure how I feel about it, because basically they put a big wedge between the two of them. They are fighting a lot in the last couple episodes. And I kind of, if I had to pinpoint where it started, it was probably when Foster had that boyfriend. And did you see that episode?
Was that this season?
Yeah, it was this season.
Okay.
Because they played last season during the summer, so that's why it's confusing.
Okay.
Anyway, so she had a boyfriend, and she was with him for a while, and then he ends up leaving because he was actually an undercover agent. It was weird. But because they had to save that guy, Lightman had to semi-admit some of his feelings to her because they were, like, being held at gunpoint. Some random reason. And then that guy ends up leaving, and it causes this weird tension between them, in that I think he was kind of embarrassed that he had to say what he had to say, and then she didn't know how to deal with it or something, because now it's like he hasn't written the book, because this whole book thing, he's got a book deal.
Yeah.
So he hasn't, he got an advance for like $2 million to write this book, and he's
barely written a sentence.
It's been 2 years, he hasn't written anything. And so the company's like, we want our $2 million back. And the Lightman Group is already in the red. So he doesn't have the $2 million. So basically, she's all like, dude, write the book. She's like, I don't care what you write. Write something. Give it to them. And so she's all over him about writing the book. And he's already got this pressure. And he's like, leave me alone. And so he's getting mad at her about that. And then she's trying to deal with the finances. And she actually cut him off from his own bank accounts.
Right?
Because they have dual partnership in their bank accounts and their finances. And so she basically cut him off.
Right.
And so...
And that really pissed him off.
Oh, my God. And so he was like, it's my money. You touch my money again, you're gone.
Yeah.
So he, like, threatened to fire her, which I was like, are you kidding me? That's not how you deal with somebody you've been friends with for 10 years. But they've been doing all this tension.
Having only seen this season of Vladimir, I sort of felt like that's kind of his character.
Well, he's a jerk.
Yeah.
However, he's not usually a jerk to her.
Okay.
He basically, the two people he usually treats really well are his daughter and Foster.
Okay.
And everybody else he's a jerk to. But to Foster, they have a really unique relationship, and they support each other. Okay. And they're both ridiculously loyal to each other. So this season, I mean, there are a couple of isolated incidents last season where he was kind of mean, but not really. This season, it feels like they are really playing up the tension between them and the fighting going on between them, that it's going to come to this big, it's going to come to a head.
Well, yeah.
And they're building that up, and I don't know how I feel about that. Like, it could be awesome, or it could totally suck. Like, I'm not sure where they're going.
I'm curious to see where they go with that, yeah. Well, it is different. Give me a little bit more background into their relationship.
Yeah, they basically have, from what I understand, both of their spouses thought that they were sleeping together. So that's part of the reason why Lightman's ex-wife divorced him, because she thought something was going on between him and Jillian.
Okay.
And then her husband thought he was always jealous, even though he was the one sleeping around. So there's always been this tension between them. Like, the only thing keeping them from sleeping with each other was they both were married. And now neither one of them are married. And so there's really, the only thing keeping them from doing anything is their own, you know, self-control.
Yeah.
Because Lightman recognizes that she is literally the only real friend he pretty much has left. And he doesn't really want to mess with that.
And yet all this is happening.
Right. And so that's why I'm not sure how I feel about what's going on. It feels slightly out of character to me. Except that it's not. Because he is a complete jerk. I mean, he's a jerk, but...
He's never really crossed that line.
With her, right. They have very specific lines that they've discussed. Like, he's not supposed to read her face.
Mm-hmm.
He's not supposed to tell her when she's lying, and she's not supposed to read him. They are breaking those rules left and right this season.
Yeah.
And that was a very specific rule that they set down to maintain their friendship. So
maybe that's the sexual tension manifesting itself.
Well, the other thing is he has a hard time reading her, and he thinks part of it is she's a much better liar than she pretends to be, and the other part of it is that his emotions interfere, how he feels about her interferes with him reading her, so he can't. Though I will, one thing I do want to talk about real quick about this week's episode was Trisha Helfer.
Yeah.
Rocked my socks on this week's episode. She was awesome. Because I was like, There's this scene where he actually is making out with Trisha Helfer, and I was like, that's particularly hot, and I don't know why.
because it's Trisha Helfer, God.
but the thing is I watched Battlestar Forever, and I had no interest in her and Baltar. Like, they were having sex left and right, and I was like, whatever. It was just bland to me. But her scene with Lightman was just like, I need a fan.
Yeah, because, that scene was just intense.
It was really, I was just like, wow.
I was like, wow, they got away with putting this on network?
Well, I mean, they weren't, like, having sex or anything, but
that was an intense makeout session, like.
And they, the whole, you know what it was, too? I think it was the whole foreplay that happened before that happened. Because he has this thing where he invades people's personal space. But in this particular case, he was really using it as foreplay.
Well, I think there was also like two or three like almost kisses.
Right.
Before it actually happened.
Yeah, so it built up. And so when it finally happened, you were like, woo!
Yeah.
Anyway, that was a good episode.
Yeah.
All right. Moving on. Unless you have a comment. Oh, you don't watch it anymore. I was talking to you, Allison. Sorry.
Yeah, no, I gave up on Lie to Me. Number of episodes ago.
Sad. All right. The next one we're going to talk about...
That's how I felt about the series.
I still love it. Alright, the next one we're going to talk about is The Event, which is a show that has surprised me in that I was ready to write this show off as being a waste of my time.
Yeah.
But it's been getting better. I mean, the last episode I thought was... by far the best episode they've ever had.
Absolutely. Like, this is definitely, like, I'm calling it a slow burn kind of show. Like,
right.
It started off very bland and very whatever, but just kept me intrigued enough to come back to see the next episode, and it's been progressively getting more and more interesting. Even plot lines that I wasn't interested in the beginning, I'm now interested in.
Yeah, and they had this really good storyline with, because the storyline with John Ritter's character is pretty much wrapped. Like, they pretty much finished that storyline.
Jason Ritter.
What did I say?
John Ritter.
Oh, yeah. Totally different.
Deceased dad.
That really would be interesting.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Yes, we brought him back from the grave just for this show.
Oh, wow. That was slip of the tongue. Jason Ritter. His storyline is totally wrapped up. And it wrapped up, I guess, satisfyingly, sort of. By the time it started to wrap up, I didn't care about his storyline anymore. I was more interested in what
was
going on.
Well, now we have more time to focus on Sophia and Thomas and all those guys.
Oh, yeah, that is fantastic.
The thing is, they still are doing things with Jason Ritter and his girlfriend.
Yeah.
It's just gone off in another direction, but it's still the two of them. And I got to tell you, they're the weakest part of the show.
I agree.
Absolutely, yeah.
I agree.
Literally fast forward through their sections.
But I think the fact that they now have D.B. Sweeney as a hostage or a prisoner, it makes the dynamic a little bit more interesting.
Yeah, but they just left him, though.
Did they?
Yeah. And I don't know if he's going to be back. And frankly, up to this point, he's been kind of wasted. He really hasn't done much of anything.
Yeah.
He's just the thug. But
yeah.
I have to say the good storyline is with the president and Sophia and Thomas and them playing the one man up brinkmanship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was great.
Yeah, it's like it was because I didn't even think about it because they were like he was like all those airplane victims are gonna die if I don't give you the vaccine. I need you to give me Sophia and all the prisoners. And I was like, oh, they're totally screwed. And then the president came back with, well, if you don't give me the vaccine, I'm going to kill all the prisoners. I was like, oh, I didn't think about that. That's true. It's a hostage. It's a hostage exchange. I was like, it's brilliant.
It was a great, like, game of chicken.
Yes, and it was really good. The only thing I thought was irritating was his wife. Like, she was all like, how could you kill people who are innocent and blah, 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 blah. I was like, look, he's the president. You need to back off. He's got a situation. He's got basically, he's got a terrorist negotiation going on.
Right.
And this guy's threatening to kill American citizens and to get him to comply in full, which makes him look like a weak president. And he can't do that.
Right.
See, what drives me crazy about scenes like, you know, his wife coming over and berating him for that is that we have to have, like, the PC voice of peace and love and gentleness toward everyone.
And
it doesn't make any sense
situations.
In this context. It really doesn't.
Right. Yeah. I was just like, shut up and let him do his job.
Right.
Yeah.
And he did it really well. And what was interesting is everybody's like, oh, he would never do that. He's a weak president. And he was all like, yeah, we're going to go kill them. And he and the fact that they were going to use gas to kill them was just like, ooh.
Yeah.
When you think about it, that's actually the kindest way that he could kill them off. They'd fall asleep before they'd actually be dead.
That's true.
There's a lot nastier ways of killing people if you really want to do that.
That's true, but it was still like, whoa. You know,
so, I mean, it's brutal, but, you know, think about it. The other guy was planning on killing hundreds of innocent people as well.
Yeah,
in a very painful and awful way.
Yeah,
too.
They were going to bleed out of all their orifices.
Yeah.
So, and Thomas is an interesting character, but there was this weird disconnect where. When the president threatened to kill Sophia, where he actually was kind of like, oh man, I hadn't thought that through and my plot's totally messed up. What am I going to do? And he was all upset about it. But then the next scene, he's talking to...
I can't remember his name either.
The Secret Service guy. He was talking to him. And all
the
of a sudden
double
he,
agent.
Yeah, yeah, he was all like, oh, well, if he kills Sophia, that's fine because I'm going to do what I'm going to do. And I was like, what? That doesn't make sense to the last thing we just saw. And then when they cut back, he looks guilty again.
Yeah.
That was a little weird.
Well,
you know, there's a lot of inconsistency in the show, and that's what kind of drives me crazy with it. I mean, you know, I'm watching it and everything, but it's one of those shows where I keep asking myself why I'm watching it. Because, it, you know, there's things that happen that are interesting, and then there are things that happen that are really painfully obvious, and then there are things that are happening that are just plain dumb. It's like, I'm sorry, but real human beings wouldn't act that way. And you know, it's like this constant shuffling back and forth between these various qualities of, well, you know, that the show has, and they don't seem to really get it together completely. I'm hoping that they do, but, you know, they haven't yet.
Well, I think the main part, what you're talking about being stupid and inconsistent, is in the Jason Ritter storyline. The only thing is that they've just done to make that slightly interesting is they met this kook who's all like, yeah, you're the reason they grabbed your father to be the pilot of that plane is because he discovered aliens in Alaska. And they said the A word. They finally have said that they're aliens. And I was like, yes! And they're now dragging them into the main story.
Okay, now, is it me or was that kook lady? Was that Amanda Greystone?
Yes, it looked like her.
I have
been a fan of hers actually since Deadwood, and
she's
a fantastic actress.
I love her, but I kind of wish that people would stop casting her as
a crazy, depressed person. Yeah.
So wait, do you guys know what the event is yet?
No.
Because they had advertised it as that was going to be a show that they weren't going to string audiences along, and it feels like. What episode is this? Seven?
But, you know, they haven't even mentioned
the event
since, like, the first episode.
You know what, though?
So
I have my ideas based on a brief line of dialogue that they had when they were having that conversation in the park about, you know, whether people should die and, you know, back and forth. And Thomas, at one point, you know, he was told... Well, you know, you can't kill all these people. And he said, and it was like a throwaway line. It was not followed up. He said, well, they're all going to die soon anyway.
Right, yeah.
And that leads me to believe that whatever the event is, it's something really catastrophic that's just going to, like, wipe nearly all life off the planet.
Right.
And that they know about it somehow.
Well, did you also notice the line in the flashback, Secret Service guy? He changed his name twice. That's why I can't remember his name. Because he was going by Mason.
He was Mason in the 50s.
And then he was Simon later.
Now he's Simon.
I think his real name is Simon. Anyway, he was talking about his home or home world or whatever had no water.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Because they were at the ocean and he had never swam in water before. Mm-hmm. So I was like, huh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Anyway, all right, so... Like I said, I think the show is getting more interesting. As long as they stay with the aliens president storyline, I'm happy.
Yeah.
Have less time with...
We can phase out Jason Ritter and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's not as interesting. Okay, so moving on to Glee. This week's episode was a Rocky Horror Picture Show theme.
Ugh.
Tell us how you really feel.
Can I just say that Glee needs to stop doing these themed episodes?
Oh, please. Because
not
yes.
one of them has been good.
I liked the sequences with Brittany S. Pierce as Brittany. I thought that was kind of funny. The whole episode was all right, but I like that.
It was okay, but really, the theme episodes just bore me to death, and now they do Rocky Horror, which I love, and
did they do it badly? Oh, they did it so badly.
Ugh.
It was really painful to watch. And the thing is, you know, what was really awful is that it started out extremely well. The opening was very strong with the lips.
Yeah.
Oh, I did like that. Yeah,
and
yeah.
Even their first song was pretty good.
Which one was the first song they did?
There's a Light.
Oh yeah, that was pretty good. It's like There's a Light and Damn It Janet were like the two that I kind of liked.
Yeah, of course, Damn It Janet got cut halfway through, but the thing is, it was awful. It was like being stuck in a car with a guy who won't ask for directions, and he just makes the wrong turn every single time. You should be able to take something like this and do something great with it, and instead they just kept making the wrong decisions every time. They got to another scene, so by the end of it, it just looked like a disaster area.
What do you think? I was asking Peter because he has a title.
I don't love the Rocky Horror Picture Show like Allison and Josh. I think it's one of those critic-proof movies where everything that's bad about the Rocky Horror Picture Show, you can always argue like, well, that's what makes it great, and it's like, man, I guess.
Well,
you know, like, that's part of it. It always feels to me like something that really should be, and this is probably why the Midnight thing is so popular, something that really should just be a stage show. Because it's not really shot that
movie. It was a stage show originally.
Right, the movie itself isn't very, it's not very cinematic. It's very, I love Tim Curry, and the time warp scene's great, and it's funny to see Susan Sarandon so young. So it's one of those weird things where like, and Libby and I discussed this, I don't know if it was about Glee or something, where like, camp is kind of, intentional camp is kind of hard to pull off. So now you have it like twice removed with Glee because Glee's doing their campy version of a movie that's already kind of campy. So it just comes across
kind of campy.
It's too self-conscious or something.
I totally agree with you that Rocky Horror as a movie itself is terrible.
it's not so much a movie as an experience.
Right.
Like the only way you can appreciate Rocky Horror is with a live audience.
Exactly. Right.
And I'm going to come in from the other side of this, which is I've never seen Rocky Horror, which everyone gasp.
Although I've never seen Rocky Horror with an audience, so there you go.
I've never seen it, period. So I'm watching Glee, which is doing its thing to a movie that I've never seen before. So I'm watching it with fresh eyes, and I didn't like it.
But how different is that, Libya, from episodes Glee has done where they've focused on a pop star that you don't know? Like, you didn't really know Lady Gaga.
Yeah, but
it's still the idea that you're like, I don't know who this is.
You totally outed me with my non-Lady Gaga. not knowing a song versus not knowing a movie, it's because I'm supposed to understand context.
True.
And I have no context for this. And there were a couple of numbers. Like, the only song that I know from Rocky Horror is Time Warp.
Of course, yeah. That's
cool. Like, I know that one, and that's it. What I thought was, I kind of felt was a little bit of a cheat, was having Mercedes play the transvestite.
Yeah, that made the song make absolutely
no
sense.
I was like, she's got the strongest voice, true, but it's weird now. And I understood why they didn't want Kurt to do it, because the last episode, he had just done the whole transvestite thing with Victor.
Well, and
Victoria.
To be fair, Kurt's not really Tim Curry-like either.
Right,
you know
and
I mean?
So,
like,
I understood that, but having a woman play a transvestite, just, what?
No, I totally think that, and I know Allison had said this on her Facebook thing, I think that conceptually I totally agree with you guys. I'm just saying, of the scenes in Glee, because Mercedes can sing, I was like, well, at least that's engaging. Like, so.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but I understand thematically it doesn't really.
Yeah,
it's
just
you know, like I had said, she can sing the hell out of it, but then she can sing the hell out of anything. It's just that casting a woman as Frankenfurter, it just really, you know, it defeats the whole purpose of
right. Exactly.
Right. And it made no sense to me.
And of course, what we're not even discussing is that the whole plot of the episode is that, is it Mr. Schuster? Is that
his name? Schuster.
Is that Schuster is basically doing this entire thing because he wants to get the counselor back. And Schuster's always been a weird character where he's, he always straddles that line of like, enthusiastic teacher and creepy older guy. You know, it's like, really?
This was,
he's like,
this
well,
was
I guess
definitely
I'll have to,
creepy.
I'll have to cast myself in the role. I'm like, oh, come on, man. Geez. Really? You know, like,
and,
just,
and then when they finally did, like, touch me, which was just awful.
I like
the actress. I think she's very cute, but she can't sing to save her life.
Right. Well, was she supposed to be singing? Like, oh, I don't see. That's the thing is, I don't know the song. The only thing I appreciated was they took his shirt off. I was like, yay.
Well, but although, like, Julia's thing was, she's like, I don't understand. She's like, they're doing this song. She's like, really, Schuster has nothing to do in that scene except for have the shirt.
Right, and so he's so, right, he's like, I need to practice.
Yeah. I know. Like, what do you need to practice?
It's like, it's like, wait. The song is entirely her. Like, all you do is sit around.
Right.
Yeah,
and that was my thought, too, because I didn't know what song he was talking about. I need to practice. So once they're starting to do it, I was like, that seems like a scam to me, you know?
Yeah.
And, which it was.
A little bit,
which
yeah.
Totally
I mean,
was.
He has
and
one
she...
line in it, which is creature of the night.
Yeah. And
you don't
right.
need to practice that too
if she
much.
Was such a Rocky Horror enthusiast as she claimed to be, how could she not see what do you need to practice touch me for?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's true, too. I really, when we were watching about halfway through, Julia told me that she's like, is it me or is Glee kind of boring? And I was like, it's a weird... Yeah, it's weird because when the shows, I think actually, Glee is one of the one of the strange shows where it can be funny and I can like the musical stuff, but actually the thing that works the best for Glee, I know it's gonna sound really cheesy, it's usually the kind of tug at your heartstring Kurt episodes.
Yeah,
it's usually the ones that make me kind of emotionally like kind of sad or like you know like, and so the further they get away from that. And they stick with their campiness. It's like, I don't mind. I love Jane Lynch. Obviously, she's very funny. But I kind of, I think those are the two best ones, the Kurt episodes.
Yeah,
oh, yeah.
Definitely.
Every time they do a Kurt-centric
like
episode, it's great.
That was the most recent Kurt episode with his father in the hospital.
Oh, I like that.
I could not stand.
Really?
I hated that with every fucking
Wow.
I felt really bad.
Yeah,
really?
Yeah, that was my favorite episode.
That's my favorite episode this season.
Yeah, that's my favorite too.
So emotionally manipulative and obvious.
Well,
like,
I mean,
I could have ticked off every single thing that happened before it happened, and it was just, it made me cringe.
But, but subtlety is not really.
Yeah, that's not Glee's thing.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's
just.
Glee has many things. Subtle is not one
which
of them.
Is, which, that's not what they're trying to be, you know?
It's just, you know, I don't watch the show to get a very special episode of Glee.
I mean, I know what you're saying, but I think in a weird way, that is what I'm watching, because that's the stuff that gets me. Even though I totally know what you're saying, it is manipulative and everything, but I don't know. I like that stuff.
For me, it's just because I love Kurt and I love his father so much that I was okay with it.
I was too. I love that episode.
I like them when they're used well. I don't like it when I just feel like, oh, you know, this is supposed to be so serious and so sad. And it's like, I didn't believe the setup from the very beginning. And especially when he's like perfectly fine the next day. You know, I had a mother who was in a coma for a couple of days, and she didn't just zing out of bed and sit on the couch. She was in there for a long time and had to go through therapy. And it's another one of those things that just seemed completely inauthentic and only done for the benefit of this week's plot, which will probably be undone by next week's plot where they come up with something else.
That's Glee, though.
Yeah, that's Glee. I mean, and to be fair, I would actually say that what you're talking about medical conditions, I mean, if you're going to do that, I mean, you're going to go down that road, you should explore, like, House or something. Like, House is more like, he'll figure out what it is, and I guess they're just walking out the door now. I guess everything's okay. I mean,
House is so formulaic. It's like if they...
House has been doing essentially the same story for
But my point was more like, I mean, you know, clearly all these type of things are... These are television shows, and they're not necessarily super heavy television shows, so...
I don't want to watch Glee for something super heavy. I like it when it's being light and funny. I don't want it to deliver a message to me.
I see your point.
Actually, I will say this. You know what I don't like on Glee? And it might be to Allison's point. I don't like the stuff. I want to say, I hate that I can never remember his name. Is the guy Quinn or Finn?
Finn.
Quinn so is the Finn girl. Is the one who used to be the quarterback.
Yes.
Okay.
He's now quarterback.
I hate the ongoing thing of him being picked on by the two jocks.
Well, that's not ongoing anymore because he's quarterback again.
No, but didn't they just pick on
him? No, they picked on the blonde guy because he joined Glee.
Right. I really hate those characters. Like, yeah. I can't stand, like... To me, that would be kind of what Allison's saying, where that's supposed to be something where it's like, well... I mean, and as we know, in the world we're living in, the whole idea of being bullied and stuff is terrible. I mean, that's an awful thing, and I really hate that treatment. I hate characters. I hate it. Like, I really can't stand that. But Kurt and his stuff with his dad, I mean... Yeah, I really like that stuff.
All right, wait. Let's move on because we could apparently talk about this for a while.
Yeah.
So we've got a long list of shows to talk about.
We could do an entire show on just Glee.
Yeah.
Right.
So the next show we have to talk about is Modern Family, which was the very special Halloween episode.
Yeah. Which I hope they do. I hope that, like The Simpsons and other shows, I hope, you know, in olden days, I think.
In we olden days,
they networks would actually have like an episode of Three's Company or whatever to be their Christmas episode. And then actually, that was just the episode they would rerun. But I like how a lot of television shows now will take something like Halloween and they'll do new ones. So I'm hoping that even though I liked this episode, I'm hoping the next season of Modern Family, they have another Halloween. Like, I think Halloween's a really interesting, or Christmas or whatever. It's an interesting like thing where you can do these different type of shows. Community also did one just now where it was like a zombie episode.
Oh, but
it was
kind
of cool because it was because I was like, well, is this an alternate reality? How is it zombie? Then they come up with some silly reason.
Well, it was weaponized rabies, kind of like in 28 Days Later.
But going back to Modern Family, I know that Brian, who's not in this podcast, but he's one of our regulars. He's a huge Modern Family supporter.
Oh, yeah.
And he didn't really like this one. I watched it twice because Julia hadn't seen it, so I don't watch it again. And I don't think it was their best episode ever, but I enjoyed it. It was
definitely not their best episode ever. I sort of felt like there were parts that were just too awkward, like especially between Jay and Gloria.
With the dialogue or accent?
With the accent thing. And I mean, of course, Gloria is a drama queen.
Yeah, I was about to say, that's Glee.
Yeah,
like, that's her character.
That's her character. But there was just something about it this week that felt, like, really awkward about it.
Like, I understand what you're saying. And the thing, there are two things that bothered me this week. One was I thought the wife, I can't remember her name, who was all about Halloween. This
Julie?
Is my,
Claire.
She's like, this is my special holiday. I don't bother you. This is my thing, blah, blah, blah. It felt way over the top for her.
I loved that.
It felt out of character to me.
No, big speech about the turkey and everything. I thought that was fantastic.
It didn't work.
I really liked that.
That didn't work for me. One second. Uh-huh. And then the other thing, when you're talking about Gloria and Jay, I don't understand. Like, when she finally is like, okay, I get it. I forgive you guys. I'm fine. Let's move on. And then they sit around the table and just make fun of her.
Well, that you're talking about the sting.
And that was like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Like, that didn't feel right at all.
I didn't mind. I will concede to that point. It does feel a little out of character. I laugh, but I see what you're saying. The Claire thing, though, I liked giving Claire... Usually the thing about Claire is that she's kind of... She's the wet blanket of the show. That's the point. Her character is the... She's the mom who like everyone else wants to do something fun.
Right.
But I liked it. I was like, oh, it's kind of cool. Claire's the one who wants to have this really fun Halloween thing.
Right,
but of course... She does it in the Claire way, which is that, like,
she overproduces.
Everything needs
you
to
have
be.
To, right, she overproduces. Yeah. You have to come in and do this, and you have to stay in the cave. Actually, I thought that was really fun. I loved film with his welcome back. I loved all that stuff. I thought that was really, I don't know, I thought it was pretty funny. And the Spider-Man thing, which we're not even talking about.
Oh, that was great!
I was like, good. He's in the bathroom stall, and he's totally like Spider-Man. You know who can do this? Spider-Man. And he's climbing up.
That was actually pretty great. He's like, you know who's equipped to get down to your car without anyone seeing you?
Spider-Man.
That was, and then he's like crawling down. I was like, oh my god. Like, all of that Spider-Man
that was
stuff was really good.
And, well, the other thing, like,
I was going to ask, did we ever find out what Cam's traumatic...
Yeah,
that was... He explains
every time they open the... Right, covering his head.
Yeah, and he's like, every time they pull it off, he like gives another detail about it, and it was like this totally mundane,
pants as a kid in front of other kids or something
it was totally
the worst Halloween ever.
And I so knew like how he was like building it up as like this huge trauma. I'm like, this is gonna be something so banal.
But I love that. That was actually a good line from Claire when she says something like, "What is this thing that you were afraid to talk about but can't stop talking about?" Like, I thought that was pretty good. I was like, oh.
Yeah, that was good. But I'd say the Spider-Man storyline is by far the funniest. Because he kept squeaking, and the guy was like, "What's that
noise?" What's that noise? And I thought they didn't take it in the direction which I thought they were going to, which was he Mitch? So Mitch comes up the stairs, and he hears the guys talking about vampires. And he's like, and Julia's like, oh, they're totally scamming him. It's the whole, he's going to get to work and no one's dressed up. But that's not what it is. It's just that those are the two nerds who, like, get dressed up. I was like, and then when the guy calls him Twilight, he's like, by the way, why are you in the sun right now, Twilight? So I thought that was all pretty funny, man. Like, that was, I don't know.
That storyline was funny. And that goes with my supposition that...
They're your favorite character.
They are my favorite of the three families.
Phil.
I'm all about Phil.
No,
Libya has a Libya. You know why I like Phil.
Okay, Phil is you. I watched Modern Family in like a week and a half. I got Peter lent me the Blu-rays, and I crashed through them. And I was like, oh my god, Phil is you. And he has like his bizarre I'm not gonna say really bizarre, but his little hobbies are like Peter's hobbies. An example would be, they were like randomly talking about Phil and his hobby of breakdancing, and I fell out laughing because Peter's like big high school college thing was that he used to breakdance. I was like, what? Are you guys the same person? And then the whole iPad story, where he like got up at 5 o'clock in the morning. I was like, yeah, Peter did that too. And I was like, you are the same, except for minus the three kids.
Well, right.
And I'd say Julia's not quite as hyper
as
Claire, but there are similarities. She is the mature one between the two of you. So I was just cracking up. I was like, you guys are the same. You are clones. That's why you like Phil.
He's awesome. Okay. Probably one of the most important characters in television.
Not narcissistic at all, I see.
I just like Phil because he's hilarious.
Yeah, he's
hilarious.
Well, I really like Cam and Mitch. I think that
I love them too.
My favorite.
I love Cam and Mitch. I'm not disparaging them at all.
No, I'm just saying that's my
favorite. And actually, if I had one criticism of this episode, it was actually they barely used Manny. And I really like him too.
Oh, man, yeah. Man, Mr. Mature. Because
he was like the
Frankenstein thing. That was like the last episode.
Cappuccino.
Why is your hand shaking? Like, I'm always on my fifth one. That's what I do. Like,
I think you've got a problem, man.
All right, let's move on from the greatly entertaining Modern Family to the mediocre Big Bang from this week.
Yeah.
I think missing Penny is really showing.
Wait, yeah. So, okay, did she break her leg? Is that what
she broke her leg, and you can tell. And what probably happened, I'm going to give them the benefit, is they had already written this episode with Penny in it. And then they had to do a really fast rewrite and subtract her from the story, and it just feels bare. Yeah. It feels like something is missing.
Wasn't she barely in the last one too? And that was better.
But you could feel her presence missing.
Yeah.
In both episodes.
Definitely this week. Last week,
what was last week?
It was okay.
He's dating Roger's sister.
Right.
No, he's sleeping with her. He's
sleeping with her. What was the one before?
Was Sheldon dating the girl that's not his girlfriend? His girlfriend / girlfriend.
And she wanted him to meet her mom.
Oh, that was kind of funny.
Yeah, but you could tell Penny was missing. Like, the scene where he's panicked and wants to talk about it, you could tell he was going to go talk to Penny.
Yeah.
But instead he runs down the stairs to talk to Sheldon, Leonard, which was, weird. And this week,
this week,
it felt flat.
Yeah, like, this week, I could definitely feel the presence.
Yeah,
of
this one, I would definitely say the last week, it was like halfway through, I was like, huh, Penny's not here. This one, I totally was like, it's weird. It's weird not having that dynamic.
Right.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, so I'd say this week's episode, I didn't care that Leonard was sleeping.
Yeah, and also it's just a tired plot. We've seen that in so many shows. There's the friend who's got the hot sister, and then they sleep. It's just like, who cares? Like, I just didn't.
The only interesting scene at the end, right? When they all started revealing each other's secrets.
Oh, that was good.
Yeah, that was a good scene.
Okay, yes. Okay, that was
the best scene of the episode, and almost made it worth sitting through the rest.
Yeah, but it wasn't that.
No.
Yeah. Pretty not that great.
So, do we know when she's coming back?
Well, they actually halted production.
Okay.
So that...
Well, that means they might go into reruns then for a while.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, they're going to go into reruns. They halted production because they're waiting for her to heal enough to be back on the show.
Can't they just make her character break her leg and she just sits on the couch?
Well, I don't know how bad... She might have been really hurt.
She's not... Yeah. No, we would have heard she's dying. She's not
I didn't
like,
say she was dying, but just because... Just because, you know, you could have broken your leg and been in traction and can't come into the office and shoot an episode.
So it's not like she just has a little thing on her foot.
I don't know. I have no idea. I just know that she couldn't be in those episodes. Hmm. And there's obvious... If she had just broken her leg and it was simple, she would have just shown up with a broken leg.
Right.
So obviously it's a little more serious than that. So they're shutting down production until she's well enough to be back on the show.
Okay.
And as far as I know, they shut down for... But I think they're back shooting?
Yeah, I think they started shooting again just because I follow Will Wheaton's Twitter.
Right.
And he mentioned that he was on set for Big Bang last
night. So she's obviously now well enough to be back on the set. But for a little while, she wasn't. So they shut down until she was. Okay, so moving on, because Big Bang, I don't think, was really deep enough to have a long discussion about.
Yeah.
Vampire Diaries!
We are on Vampire Diaries.
Here we go.
All right. Josh is like, oh, not again. But
wait,
this...
do we all watch it?
No. I don't watch it.
Allison?
No, I haven't watched it.
Oh, Allison, you've got to get into it.
I'm waiting for the holiday lull in TV to get season one and finally dive into it.
Allison?
Yeah, I got the lecture from Libya that I should be watching it last night.
Oh, yeah.
It's
just, you know, when I first saw it, it looked like it was just a Twilight.
Totally.
Knockoff.
Yeah.
And I would rather shoot myself in the head than watch Twilight. So it really just looked like something I would not be interested in. And I have been told that it's gotten a lot better than that.
Right. In fact, there was that. Allison, I completely sympathize with you. Like, there's an episode on this week's The Office where Stanley's like, how many vampires am I supposed to care about? You know, like, so, no, I completely understand. And the first two or three episodes, the show is exactly what you think it is, and you'll be like, this is lame, but then it gets pretty good.
It's by episode four, at the end of episode four, you kind of go, huh, well, that was interesting, and then it just ramps up. It just totally just freaking takes off. I watched the first season in like 2 or 3 days. It was insane. I crashed through that show.
And I would say that this will take us into the actual episode. The thing that Vampire Diaries does really well that I don't know if the event is doing, but a lot of shows have the problem, True Blood, is most shows that try to do big arcs, they'll have something big, like, oh, I can't believe Libby is a double agent, but we're not going to reveal that until the last episode. What's really cool about Vampire Diaries is that you and I talked about this, it's, what, every 3 or 4 episodes, they pretty much resolve whatever big thing they were going to do, and then they barrel into something else.
Right.
So if you're, the first season, I'm not going to say what it is, but in the first season, there's something that I was convinced would be the finale of 22 episodes. And Olivia, of course, was ahead of me, and she's like, it's not what you're thinking, and they wrapped that up in like 3 or 4 episodes, and I was like, well, now what are they going to do for the rest of the season? And they totally topped themselves. They came up with better things. And in last Thursday's episode,
we had just been talking
about the
villain that they introduced for season 2. I was like, this villain is awesome, and she's probably going to last through the season, and her plot's going to be this.
Right.
And how we were talking about, well, are they going to kill her at the end of the season because she's such an awesome villain? And Peter was like, oh, they can't kill her because, you know, do you have to bring
her
back?
Powerful,
she's too
right.
powerful. You got to bring her back. And I was like, yeah, but you can't have her be the villain for long. Because you need something new. And I was like, well, she'll probably have this great... Because she obviously... The thing is we knew she had a plan. So we knew she had this big, elaborate plan. And we thought that that was going to be the season to find out what her big, elaborate plan is. Last night's episode, they totally defeat her.
They totally defeated her.
It's
and
like,
I was like, what? Like,
we're episode 7 of the season. And they defeat the big bad. I was like, all right. Like,
which I will say, the only tiny criticism in the trailer for next week's episode very much looks like a transition. Because... whatever kidnapped Elena, I'm like, yeah, that looks kind of lame. But I mean, like, but I'm assuming that's just that little, like, now we're going to slow things down a little, and then kapow, we'll get back. So I'm prepared for next week to be okay. But yeah, this week was
about it was the entire episode was like this big chess game, because you had the big villain who knows the two main characters.
Who's got a plan B, C, D.
D and E.
Yeah
her like, plans were elaborate. Because it was like the week before... They foil her plan, And they're all, like, all happy about it. Like, ah, we foiled your plan. What are you going to do now? She's like, you don't think I had a plan B?
In fact, I think that's the name of the episode. It was plan B. All right, yeah.
And she's like, you don't think I had a plan B, C, D, and every letter of the alphabet? And they were like, oh. And so this week, they're actually attempting to outsmart her. So they have, like, five plans.
Right.
So as you're watching the episode, you see them make a move, and you see her make her counter move, and then you see the other counter move, and you're watching the episode going, who the heck is going to win this?
And it really feels like she's going to win.
Right.
Because I was like, I don't know how they're... Each one, I was like, I don't know how they're going to get out of this.
Right, because her plan looked really much better than their plan, because she's way smarter than them, right?
Well, also because she's...
She's older.
Older, right.
Right, yeah, and so she had, like, all this stuff going on, and the flaw in her plan was she miscalculated one of her allies.
Right.
And that... This person owed her a favor and was compelled to, by magic, basically to fulfill that favor.
Right.
So she thought she was golden. But she basically ended up pitting two family members against each other and thought it was going to be cool because in her mind, she's evil. She's like, in her mind, whatever. She doesn't care. And then the person was like, yeah, I know I technically have to fulfill this, but I can totally screw you too. And it was awesome.
That was really good.
Yeah, it was. And she's defeated. I was like... What?
Notice really? We're saying defeated.
Not killed. because you were right, because she is such an awesome villain.
She's just too much of an integral part of the show. So,
right, so you knew that she was going to end up... She at some point, maybe season 3, season 4, whatever, she's going to come back.
The other thing the show does really well is that I'm... And I don't know, Josh and Allison, even though you don't watch Vampire Diaries, you can tell me what you guys think. I'm not a huge fan of... even on like Buffy the Vampire Slayer, I'm not a big fan of, like, when you have a show usually about vampires, there's always those flashback episodes when you go back and you go, oh, look, before he was Spike, he was William. And I hate those episodes because I always think it looks really stagey and, like, True Blood just did it with
Eric.
The Viking. I always think it looks really fake and everything.
Right?
It's not that I think the production value of Vampire Diaries is, like, through the roof. However, what's cool about their flashbacks is that their flashbacks also feel like you're getting pieces of the puzzle so that you see the first flashback and go, oh, okay, well, that's what this is. And then when you get 3 or 4 episodes down, you're like, oh, I totally look at that differently now.
Yeah.
Which this episode is clearly leading to more...
Flashbacks.
Right. Because now we're like, well, what could be more evil than her. The person that's just been defeated?
And and that's the thing, is they've now set up...
It has to be from the past.
Right. They've set up a villain that's so much more powerful than the villain we've been fighting...
Was already being, what is it, immune to Ravain?
Yeah.
I was already pretty powerful, like, so...
Right, but something that she was running from.
Right.
Okay. And so now you got a villain that she's been running from and faked her own death for, so you're like, well, what the heck can that be, you know? And it's obviously setting us up for flashbacks to see that, and their flashbacks are fantastic, because every time they do it, whatever assumption you had about the character, totally different now.
Yeah,
and,
which is
and
pretty
it's
cool.
And I like the, I think it was, I don't know if it was you that told me this, but you know our view on Damon. Damon's the there's two brothers. There's the good brother and the bad brother.
Damon is Ian Somerhalder, who is on Lost.
Lost, right? And
I don't know the other guy, Stefan.
His real name is Paul Wesley, but the Damon was what was great about him is he's all evil, whatever. But he always blamed his brother for blah blah blah. And you're thinking, well, he's just evil. Nobody, you know, he's lying, blah blah blah. And then you get to the flash where he's like, oh. He totally wasn't lying about that. So it all kind of works out and it's great.
And they do a good job of Damon, who is the evil character. I do think that clearly because it is Ian Somerhalder, he's very charismatic and he's way better than he was on Lost. Or either the character's more interesting or whatever. But like he's very charismatic, but I do think TV shows sometimes or movies have a thing where you have a character that you like love to hate. Like, oh, he's bad, but he's such a bad boy and he's sexy. They'll still have Damon do really bad things.
Oh, yeah.
That makes me go, God, I hate this guy. Like, even though he's still charming and stuff, you know,
right.
Which is
well,
tricky.
What was great was there's a scene towards the end of season 1, and this guy meets Damon for the first time, and the dude's like, oh, no, it was season 2. He goes, oh, I've heard lots of good stuff about you. He goes, really?
Yeah.
He goes, that's really surprising, because I'm kind of a jerk.
Yeah, yeah, he does say. Like, I think he just says I'm a dick, actually.
Oh,
and
he's
like, wow, like, yeah. But, yeah, you guys got to... That's pretty good. And it's weird because I tell so many people and everyone rolls their eyes. Because it is called The Vampire Diaries. And the poster is like these two booty guys.
It's very Twilight
girl,
posters.
Yeah, but it's so much better than Twilight's. Like, or at least I've seen the 3 movies. I haven't read the Twilight books. But It's totally better. And I think it's better than True Blood. Yeah. Although you read the... I don't know.
It's not better than the... The True Blood books are actually really good. But I'm actually... I don't want to read the Vampire Diaries books. Mainly because there are so many twists in this show. And there's everything is so surprising. And like,
which I
every,
like.
Right. Every couple episodes, I'm like, oh my God. And so I don't want to read the books and know what's going to happen. I really
and
don't.
Even though I like, I in general like Anna Paquin, especially when she's a kid. I don't think her role as Rogue on the X-Men and as Suki, I always think she's okay. And this new girl, I don't know what her name is.
I can't remember her name.
She's really weird. Good. Like,
oh yeah, I can't remember her name.
And she does the thing that her character does the thing. That doesn't do the thing that frustrates me about Suki is that Suki is always doing things where you're just
stupid.
What is she, an idiot? Like, why would I think I'll go into this basement with people that I can read their minds if they're trying to kill me, but I'll go down in this basement. Like, her character, Elena's character, not only doesn't do stupid things, but she always asks questions when the audience would.
Right.
Like, when finding out that the man is a vampire, like, so, what's the deal with this? You know, and she does. It's always, it's pretty, I think you and I have had a few things were like, well, that was kind of dumb. But in general, she's usually pretty smart.
Right.
You know, so.
And I like that. Only thing I had a problem with was this week's episode. She gets injured pretty badly.
Yes.
And, like, no one gives her a ride.
Right.
Home.
Like, she's like, I'll talk to you guys later. I was like, what?
Like, she's got, like, a stab wound in her back. She's stabbed in her shoulder. Her hand is cut up. And her brother is trying to mack on her friend. Is like, oh, yeah, I'm giving your friend a ride home. Is that cool? I'm like, she's bleeding.
You're just trying to defeat the ultimate evil. I think
and like,
got
she's
more
bleeding out.
Yet.
Yeah, she's bleeding out all over the place. And you're going to give her friend a ride home because you're trying to get a date. You're going to leave your sister to bleed out over here. And then Stefan was all like, oh, I need to take you to the hospital. She's like, nope, I don't want to be with you right now. I'll get to the hospital on my own. And I was like, cool. That made sense why Stefan didn't take her.
Right.
But the brother should have freaking taken her to the hospital, man. That was and then, of course, because nobody's taking her to the hospital, she gets kidnapped.
Right, and which is why next week's episode, which I think looks okay, is. So looks all right. Like,
that was my only problem. I thought that was a little dumb.
I would agree. I thought that was the only thing that I rolled my eyes.
Right, but
all I can say is thank God that by the time I get to watch this episode, I will have no memory of this conversation.
Well, also, we've been trying not to say names.
Right.
Because
I noticed that. I'm like, wow, you are using a lot of generic terminology.
Right, we're trying to, sitting at ruin it for you or Allison. So.
Right.
So, but anybody who watches the show
will know what we're talking about.
Will know exactly what we're talking about.
Right.
So, but yeah, it was great. Thumbs up.
Next show we're going to talk about, we haven't talked about this, I think, since the pilot, which is Nikita. We wanted to talk about the progress of that show, which I'm still watching, barely.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Like, it...
So this is past the point where Vampire Diaries got good. Because remember, last season, CW started, their show was Vampire Diaries, this season's Nikita.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But you're past... At this point, Vampire Diaries had already gotten good,
right?
Yeah, we're on episode six
or seven.
Yeah, so
like
by
that.
Now, it should at least be ramped.
Well, see, and that's the thing is, I thought they were doing that. Because they had, remember I called you and I was like, oh my God, Nikita might be getting better. And then no. Because they had an episode, a couple episodes ago, where Nikita rescues this guy who is, he's called a guardian. And he's like guarding this hard drive that Division needs protected because it's all blackmail material.
Yeah.
And he's a super hardcore agent.
This is like how Percy keeps his power.
Right.
With this
all the governments.
Black boxes.
Right. And he has a guarding each black box. And that's all cool. And then this guy messes up and falls in love, which screws him. And so they're going to cancel him. And Nikita figures it out and tries to rescue him. And all of that all works out, and they establish him as a pretty interesting character. He doesn't trust Nikita at first and everything, and they have this animosity, but then they've got... I was like, oh, there could be potential there, you know?
Yeah.
And
plus, it would just be nice for her to have a partner who is not on a computer screen.
Right. And that's the thing is, I think the problem with Nikita is she's too isolated. She has her partner inside Division, the girl. They have no screen time together. It's
only flashbacks.
Right. When they have flashbacks, they scream. But during the episode, they're chatting on a computer and giving each other information, and then Nikita goes off, or the girl goes off to do something, and it's not interesting. You need that dynamic between characters to play the scenes, and I think that's what Nikita is lacking. So they introduce this guy. She takes care of him. He gets injured. She nurses him back to health. She's like, join my team, help me fight them. And it looks like that's where they're going. Yeah. And I was like, all right, they got a team. And then, the next episode, he gets up and he's like, peace, and he just leaves.
He just bolts.
Well,
and he goes and he takes the black box that he was guarding, too.
Right.
Yeah.
But, like, my problem with the black box is that, or the whole black box
concept
is it feels very video gamey.
Oh, you have to collect certain
You have to find all the black boxes, and each one has a guardian, and they're far worse than I am.
Right.
Right, yeah.
And you collect points with every...
Yeah,
one.
Right. So it's like, okay, so it's like every couple episodes we're going to have, what, a boss fight?
Well, she doesn't even have any idea where any of the black boxes are, so
yeah,
it's not like she can actually go after them.
But he does, which is...
Right, so that's what he's going to be doing.
Well, let me ask this. Wait, Allison, do you watch the show too?
Yeah, I do.
Let me just
it's another one where I'm sort of asking myself why, but yeah.
I'm still waiting for it to turn the corner, and it's
really
not.
Do you guys think that the reason that the isolation of Nikita doesn't work? Do you think it's the actress or also the way the character is written? Because technically, what we started this podcast about, Dexter does a lot of stuff on his own.
Yeah,
he's totally interesting.
No, but he interacts with people. Yeah. He's never in an episode all by himself. There are characters. He interacts with his sister. He lives with his sister now. He goes to work. He has people that he talks to.
Wait, so Nikita's... She
too when she goes off on some mission to try to kill somebody.
Yeah, but you never see
somebody.
Yeah,
and then at that point she does interact.
So it's not like Alias. Where she has her...
Living in a freaking warehouse by herself.
Yeah.
And she only time she leaves the warehouse is to go on a mission. She sees these people once to complete the mission, and she goes back to the warehouse.
Yeah. It's like her only consistent interaction is with the girl Alex on the inside through a computer.
Which I know is in the pilots right now.
Right, and so it feels very
isolated. And then her only other semi-regular interaction is with... with Michael.
Is that the handler?
Yeah. Her old handler, which is always like...
At the end of a gun.
Yeah, it's always a standoff.
Yeah,
and it's like, okay, who's going to blink first? Oh, it's going to be Michael, because apparently he has some sort of history.
Feelings for Nikita.
Yeah.
So they never kill each other, but they're always standing holding guns at each other. And
that goes to the point of what's wrong with the show. It's you're basically watching the same episode
over and over again
because they keep accomplishing exactly the same things and interacting in exactly the same way. Nothing surprising or new particularly happens.
Right. Yeah. I'm on board with what you're saying. So far, still thumbs down for Nikita. Oh, well.
Yeah.
I had high hopes because I love the movies and I love the other TV shows. So.
Oh, yeah, same here.
And next up, we're going to talk about Supernatural. This week's episode was The Truth and Nothing But the Truth. Or no,
You
Can't
Handle
the Truth.
You Can't
Handle
the Truth.
Right, right. So what'd you guys think?
Loved it.
It was great. Awesome episode.
I thought they
handled the balance of drama and humor incredibly well, because it's still, I think that's kind of what's been missing a little bit for me for a little while now, this season with Supernatural, and I think with this one the little bits of humor really came back.
Oh yeah.
Like this one felt more like that. I think since Weekend at Bobby's this has been feeling more and more like the Supernatural that we know and love.
Right.
Yeah, agreed.
And I have to say, I didn't really think that Dean was going to keep going to go see Lisa and the kid all the time. I thought that was going to fall away. It just fell away faster than I thought it was going to.
Well, I think when she suddenly found herself spilling her guts to him, she was like, okay, I got to see this through to the end.
Right.
Yeah.
So, but I like the fact that once Dean realized he was hearing the truth, the woman just, what was it? The woman was like, I just got my breasts done. What do you think?
Yeah.
and he was trying to be cool and walk by,
then
he backs
up. And
then
just backs up and looks at her. Total Dean.
That was pretty good.
But
I love the conversation on the phone with Bobby. It's like, whoa.
It's like, why? Like, yeah, I get a pedicure done every week, and this guy, he does a great job. He's like, shut up. I don't need to know this.
And he actually hangs up on him at one point.
Yeah,
that was all good.
Then, of course, when he realizes everybody's telling him the truth, and he takes it to Sam to get whatever he's hiding.
Well, the only thing about about Sam was the other people that were spilling truth randomly.
Yeah.
And with Sam, there was no randomness to any of his stuff, which to me was like, dude, you're lying.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we knew right away because Sam says to him, you're right, I didn't help you because I froze. I got scared. And we're like, no, you did not.
Right.
And as soon as he said that, I'm like, oh, he's lying. He can resist this.
Right. And I thought that Dean should have known that too. Also because he wasn't acting like everybody else who was spilling the truth. Because at that point he had interacted with like three or four people who were just spilling truth to him and being like, why did I tell you that? You know, there was no moment like that with Dean at all.
Or with Sam.
Sorry, with Sam at all. So it felt weird and false. Yeah. And so I just felt that Dean should have known he was lying.
Yeah. Well, except that, you know, I think that there's a part of Dean that really wanted to believe it, despite,
you know. Yeah, because he really did, like, sort of latch on to Sam Froze very quickly.
That's right. True.
Right.
And I was like, if Dean was, like, really in his right head, he would have been like, or if it had been anybody other than Sam who had said that to him, he would have been much more suspicious.
I will have to give Allison credit because she predicted the episode before she saw it.
Okay, what did you call? How did you call it?
I totally called why Sam was different. I actually called it 2 weeks ago because I had a conversation with Brian about it. And we were talking about it, and I said, well, this is my theory, and it was right.
Okay.
I was looking at the previews. They even spell it out in big words.
Okay, well, then I'm glad I didn't see the previews.
Well, they do. You know how they flop a few scenes and then have a word on the screen?
Yeah.
They literally flash out what the reason is.
Well, I mean, you could actually tell by the end of this episode, like, because I was talking to you. I had seen the episode first, and I was talking to you, and you made your prediction. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, you're totally right, and it made sense. So I give you credit for predicting what's wrong with Sam. You don't want to say it now? You think it's a spoiler?
I would say it's, well, you know, it's kind of, but then, like, if anyone's seen the preview, they kind of know. It's not subtle.
Okay. Well, then we'll leave it then. We'll talk about it next week. But I hadn't seen the preview, but when you said it to me, I was like, you are absolutely correct.
The look on your face, that's not what I thought. It's like you looked kind of like, no.
I think it was
thinking,
a zombie.
Okay, what else is it?
I think it was a zombie makeup that threw you off.
That's it.
What you saw was defeated. Oh God, she got it right, and you took it as, oh no, she's totally wrong.
But yeah, I thought this episode was thumbs up. What was weird is Castiel. They were plugging Castiel being in the episode. He had one scene.
Yeah,
he came in. He looked for the horn. He said the horn's not here, and he left. And I was like, what? Oh, because it wasn't the horn, it was the woman. It was a goddess.
It was the goddess, Veritas. Which, of course, for me was like, okay, then what was the horn? Because, like, the guy showed a picture of the horn he had in his book, and it looked like the picture that was the horn
exactly
of Gabriel.
Exactly like the picture,
I'm like, okay, so the horn of truth is obviously a real thing out there somewhere.
Well, someone stole it, yeah. So does that mean we have to deal with that, too?
Huh. Probably.
All right, but that was just weird that Castiel came in for one scene and was out. I thought that was strange. But other than that, I thought the episode was really good. Oh, and the beatdown at the end was fantastic.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
That was just, like, so much pent-up rage in that moment.
Yeah, he was just like
I was expecting Dean to just, like, punch Sam once. But then he just laid into him.
Yeah,
holy God.
And I think Sam was actually unconscious.
Yeah.
And he was still hitting
him.
But he was unconscious and he was still hitting him. That's what I mean.
Yeah. Well, he was unconscious, but it also seemed like he was just taking it. Like,
oh, yeah.
Like he was like, I deserve this.
Mm-hmm. And the thing that I felt cheap about that was he finally has to reveal the truth. And then he's been lying to him all this time, and he finally reveals the truth, and then he goes, I need help. I'm like, really? If you knew you needed help, you should have said something episodes ago.
Yeah.
If you know you need help, you ask
for
help.
This is Sam Winchester. He spent 5 seasons whining about stuff.
Right.
Well, but you know, you understand that the reason that is wrong, the thing that is wrong with him would be the very thing that would keep him from actually getting any help.
Well, and he doesn't know what's wrong with him. And when you deal with a bunch of hunters, they find out there's something wrong with you, they might just kill you.
Well, and that,
yeah, but
that
that's
brings
another
up, like,
reason to keep it to yourself. I mean, remember the thing that is, you know, what he said about himself was that he doesn't feel anything anymore. So he wouldn't feel a compulsion to do anything except, you know, protect his own butt, which is keeping silent.
Though he did seem rather desperate when
yeah,
because I mean he could have fought Dean when Dean pulled the knife, but he was just like, I don't want to fight you. So he did care enough about Dean to not want have that fight.
He's not completely heartless,
right?
But I mean, this brings up the bigger question of, okay, does Samuel and the Campbells, do they know?
I don't think so. Up with him? No, but Samuel now knows, because Samuel's like, you totally let your brother get turned.
Yeah.
So Samuel suspects that there's something wrong. Mm-hmm. But I don't get the feeling, because they both got brought back from the dead. I don't get the feeling that the same thing that's wrong with Dean is wrong with Samuel.
Oh,
yeah, no, I Sam, agree. Wait, right. Sam versus Samuel.
Right.
I think that. There's definitely something wrong with Sam, but I didn't get the feeling that that's a problem for Samuel. Samuel's not acting the same way.
Yeah. I agree.
So, I really, this is now interesting. I'm not sure what they're going to do about it, because apparently, this is obviously going to be the arc for the season.
Yeah.
Is to figure out a way to resolve this, but I'm in. I like it. Yeah. I like the super duper monsters. I don't like the Sam the way he is now. I don't trust him.
I don't trust him, but that's what I kind of like about him now, because it's a very different dynamic with him, and it's not like the same blah, I'm Mr. Goody Two Shoes kind of character. Yeah.
Well, he's become a little bit of a wild card, because, you know, he's in a sense, I mean, if you were to put it in real world terms, he's sociopathic.
Right.
You don't. He does certain things that may be right because he's been raised to, and that's the situation he's in. But you can't count on him to know the difference between right and wrong, because he doesn't feel anything.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
But he clearly seems to feel at least something when it comes to Dean.
Right.
Yeah.
So
they are still codependent.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's like his tether.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
Hit that connection. But even then, you remember, you know, he was still willing to sit back and watch Dean get turned. So that connection is a little shaky too.
Yeah, but you know, like he did explain he knew that Samuel had a cure, and he really wanted
to catch the alpha.
They needed to get into the nest, and he knew that this was the only way. I mean, okay.
Right, but remember, the cure was also dependent on his not drinking first, and that's something he couldn't have controlled.
Right.
I mean, you know, it's a lucky thing that he didn't do that, but what if he had? Then it wouldn't have mattered that they had a cure.
I think he was banking on Dean's time in the pit, and having to get over all of that would help just strengthen his resistance.
That's a lot of gambling, though.
That's a lot of gambling.
Yeah,
again,
but I mean, that's what makes Sam such a wild card now.
It's something that a would do, because they don't care. It's not something that I could see Sam, you know, the old Sam, do.
Right. No, you're absolutely right about that, yeah.
All right, so I think we've talked about that episode. Next week looks like it's going to be good, and it's very exciting.
I haven't seen previews.
I haven't either, because I heard there were spoilers.
The previews are very good looking.
Yeah, so but I'm excited. So let's move on to Sherlock.
Yay!
Yay,
Sherlock.
And this is the second episode, but before we actually talk about it, I want to talk about some feedback we got. We got feedback from someone named Brian. Hold on a second.
Not our Brian.
Right. I'm actually going to look up the...
Or if it is, that's interesting.
Brian is sending feedback to our own podcast. That's awesome. Brian gave this feedback about Sherlock. And what I thought was interesting, he actually sent feedback into TV Campfire Gmail. And I wanted to read some of what he said, mainly because... I did know that there was an unaired pilot of Study in Pink, which was the first episode of Sherlock, but I didn't really know why they reshot it or what was it, because it was still the same two main characters. They didn't really recast.
Right.
They just shot it again for some reason. But what I thought was interesting about his comments was that he was talking about how the dialogue was a lot better, and that the difference in the acting was that he felt that in the new version, the one that was aired, that the actors... basically looked like they were on their 80th take, and they were totally tired of doing the scenes over and over again, which is interesting because to me, of course, it looked fresh.
Yeah, it seemed fine to me.
Yeah, it totally seemed fine to me because, of course, we didn't see the other version.
Right, right.
And the other thing I thought was interesting was the difference in the end where in the version that we saw, Sherlock, the cabbie comes to Sherlock's house.
Right.
Gets him to get into the car, talks him into it, and they drive off together.
Which leads to the big confrontation.
Which leads to the big confrontation, which I actually, I liked that he psyched Sherlock into getting into the car. And I kind of like what it says about Sherlock, that he did all this, because he has kind of a...
Well, he has a compulsion to know.
Yeah, his compulsion to know, and his whole sense of excitement.
It also gave us a nice lead into Moriarty, because this guy knew Sherlock's weak points and how to talk him into getting there,
right?
Because Moriarty gave him that information.
Yeah, right. And all that works. But what he was, what Brian was saying in his feedback was that in the original version, the cabbie comes to Sherlock's house and gets the jump on him and drugs him and takes him to the location, which I don't think that actually works for me because I like the insight into his head.
Right, I like the idea that Sherlock can't help himself. It's more interesting.
Yeah, and I just like that whole scene, you know, out on the sidewalk when they were, you know, playing that little game of chess with each other.
Right.
That was nice. And like you said, it gives you a look into his thought processes.
Right.
Yeah.
But one thing that I did think was interesting is he talks about, Brian was talking about the change in dialogue. Mm-hmm. Like he said one of the best lines is when they're having dinner at that chat, they're waiting for the cabbie to show up at the house and they're having dinner, you know, putting the candle on the table, that conversation.
Yeah.
And it's a longer conversation, there's more dialogue. And Watson comments that Sherlock's not eating. And he's like, "Why don't you eat your food, whatever." And his quote is, "It's all about the brain. Everything else is just transport." And I was like, that's pretty good.
That is such a great Sherlock line.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm like, oh, I wish I'd heard that.
Yeah, that's a good line.
Shame to have lost that one.
Right. Yeah. So I kind of, if I can track down that unaired pilot, I'll see if I can find it. Because that does sound at least worth checking out.
Yeah, I'm definitely curious. I would like to see how the drugging him is played.
Yeah, because on paper it sounds kind of cheesy to me.
Yeah, right. But I mean, this is also Stephen Moffat, so I want to give him the benefit of the doubt that he was able to pull this off in some unique and interesting way.
Right.
Although possibly not, since they did go to the trouble of reshooting it.
You know, that's a very good point.
That's true.
Now, I do want to ask you guys. I know that we got to see Sherlock, all of us, via our friend in England. But
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Did any of you actually watch it on PBS?
No, I only saw the same one that Livia saw.
Okay, well, because PBS was different, too.
Oh, they were cut. They cut scenes.
I got a chance to watch it, and they cut scenes.
Right.
Yeah.
And part of what they cut actually was very unfortunate because it did involve, remember, that final confrontation between the cabbie and Sherlock as they're sitting at the long table.
Right.
And the section where he talks about how he has a sponsor.
Oh, right. Oh, they cut that?
It is gone. That entire section is missing.
Oh, that's really
weird.
Yeah,
that's kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
That's like... though, and it's gone. It's completely. It's
wow.
That, and also the scene in between when Sherlock and Watson leave the apartment and the time that they show up at the restaurant, they have a conversation on the way to the restaurant.
Right, I remember that. Yeah.
And, you know, where they're talking, they're theorizing who it could be. You know, it must be someone who has easy access to people but can move invisibly, you know, and da-da-da. Mm-hmm. And that is gone, too.
Huh. Wow. Okay.
Wow, very disappointing. That sets up the cabbie.
Right.
Yes, exactly.
All right, I wanted to talk about the second episode.
The Blind Banker.
I've seen all three of them, and I think it's the weakest one, but it's still good.
I agree.
It's still good, because I like Watson and Holmes, so I mean, like, but it's still, I mean, yeah, I think you're the one who said, like, anytime you do these episodes where it's like, and we're in Chinatown, it's always a little like, like, you know.
You've introduced the cheese.
Yeah.
The thing is that's interesting is that it's based on a Sherlock Holmes episode that actually the bad guys in it were the KKK, which to me sounds like something that would be a lot more relevant than, you know, doing something about a Chinese tong. I mean, that seems like something more Victorian.
Well, weren't these guys like art smugglers or something?
Yeah. And it all was about a jade hairpin.
Yeah.
Which I was like, eh.
Oh, that's right, because the receptionist has it.
The receptionist has it, and Sherlock tells her, well, you know that hairpin is worth like
$7 million.
Yeah, $7 million or something like that. She's like, oh.
Of course, in actuality, it wouldn't matter because she's got stolen.
Yes, she has to give it back anyway.
Yeah.
It would probably go back to whatever museum it was taken from.
They could still give her a 10% reward for returning it.
Right, because Sherlock wouldn't care. But I think the interesting bits about this particular episode was Sherlock trying to figure out the code, him and Watson working together, piecing the puzzle together.
Yeah.
I liked when they were running around trying to find the graffiti, and then, of course, the scene where he's trying to get Watson to remember what was on the wall. He's grabbing his head.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
he grabs his head.
Doing like the mind meld.
Right. And then Watson's like, dude, I took a picture.
On my cell phone.
Which I was like,
it's great. It's like, yes, they remembered. It's taking place in the 21st century. Thank you very much.
Yeah, that all was really good. And then the big giant assassin dude was just weird.
Oh yeah.
That guy was like 7 feet tall. Yeah. It's like, how?
It was all shot weird too, because it's all dark, and I'm like, what's going on with this? Yeah, that was
weird. Well, and I'm like, how can you be an assassin that no one has heard of or knows or has ever seen, and you're 7 feet tall?
and cast this incredible Nosferatu shadow in the sewers.
That was so bizarre. I was like, the heck? Like,
but so, I did like a what the f*** moment, really, in the middle of it.
But I did like the reveal of Sherlock having that network of homeless people.
That was good.
That was like, you know, Sherlock's irregulars, the Baker Street irregulars. Right,
exactly.
Well, what's weird, though, is he can't socialize with regular people. How is he socializing with street people? It just seems odd.
Well, he's not really socializing. He's just hitting them up for information and giving them, like, money. So, of course, they'll give him information.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I just figure you have to at least talk to them a certain way or they'll just relieve you of your money.
Well, you know, they're probably antisocial like him, so they have that in common.
Okay.
So, wait, now... Is when Sherlock comes back for season two, is it just going to be three episodes again?
Yep.
Yes.
I know.
Yeah. If there's anything that needs at least six or something, like, can't
yeah,
we
I yeah, but, you know, Martin Freeman is now going to be playing Bilbo Baggins, so we have to...
Right, which I'm actually totally excited.
I'm totally
great.
Psyched.
That guy must be so happy. He's in Sherlock
he's
and
so
Hobbit.
Perfect for
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
Right. But I'd say this episode gave us some good Sherlock-Watson interaction. I still don't understand why Watson is such the enabler that he is. Because like when Sherlock's like, "Can you give me my phone?" and he's like, "Where is it? It's in my pocket." What?
Right.
I'm like, no,
well,
I'm not going to reach.
And actually, I kind of understand it in this one because I think this is the only version that they've ever had where they make it kind of clear that Watson is really kind of dysfunctional too.
True.
So they
yeah.
complete each other.
Yeah.
Aw, thank you, complete me.
They're the perfect couple.
Alright, if you have feedback for the podcast, you can send it to tvcampfire@gmail.com. We'll read out the interesting bits. Or if you want to actually be included in the podcast, if you record yourself, you can still send it to us. We have like a 25 megabyte limit for files, and we'll play it on the cast if you'd like. And remember to follow us on Twitter, TV Campfire, and on Facebook. Talk to you guys next week.
Bye. Happy Halloween.
Bye.
Later.